This is our biblical soul care class, and we're starting a new lesson, and I've entitled it, Who Are You Afraid Of? And we're going to discuss the fear of man, the fear of God. And just to introduce this, I've got a story. It's a true story that I want to read, and we'll just discuss it a little bit afterwards. But dozens of engineers were seated around a conference table at the Morton Thiokol headquarters in Ogden, Utah. And these engineers were meeting with the executives of Thiokol to discuss a problem associated with a possible O-ring flaw in their solid fuel rocket boosters. These rockets were used by NASA to launch the space shuttle into orbit. And there was a planned shuttle launch the next morning in Florida, but the temperatures, this was in January, the temperatures in Florida were forecast to drop into the mid-20s, which is very obviously unseasonably cold for that area. Because of the cold weather, the engineers feared that the O-rings would not seal inside the rocket properly, which could cause it to explode. But NASA was pressuring Thiokol to greenlight the launch and give them written assurance that the rocket would perform normally, even in the cold air. After listening to the concerns of the engineers, the executives of Thiokol held a vote on whether to approve the launch or not, and they decided that this vote needed to be unanimous. All the board of Thiokol, whatever they voted, it had to be 100%, one way or the other. So the vice president and president started the vote, and they moved to vote yes, stating that the evidence of the engineers was thin, and they didn't want to jeopardize their lucrative contract with NASA. And the rest of the board followed their lead until it came down to the last vote of Joseph Kilmeister. Now, Kilmeister was an engineer, and he agreed with the engineers. In fact, he was part of getting this meeting together because he had concerns. But as his boss was staring him down, everyone else had voted yes. He started to think, what if I vote yes? Or what if I vote no? And we lose the contract? NASA gets upset at us. There's a lot of money on the line. So we reluctantly voted yes. We will approve the launch. And many of you know, the next morning on January 28th, 1986, Space Shuttle Discovery exploded a little more than 2 minutes into its flight, killing all seven astronauts on board. And as Americans demanded answers, right, this secret meeting of Thiokol came out. And it was later found out that these O-rings were faulty in cold weather, and it caused this accident. All right. So how many of you remember that? Remember probably where you were. I don't remember very clearly. I was only six. It was a little foggy for me. How many of you were in school maybe and watched it on TV? I think this was a well-publicized event because the shuttle was blasting the first, I don't know, it was not an astronaut, she was just a teacher. So the first civilian was going to space. NASA was losing the public interest, and they wanted to do something to keep everybody interested because they were shooting space shuttles off and they were coming back. It was getting too routine. So we're gonna take just a civilian, and they chose a teacher. So everybody was watching, and then it exploded. So what caused Joseph then to change his mind? Why did he do that?
He didn't want to stand out. He didn't want to be the odd man out.
Yeah.
He was the guy that stopped the whole process.
Yeah. And NASA was under a lot of pressure, too. They had promised. The budget was way overblown. They were spending way too much money. And they had promised the government that they could pay for these launches by government contracts with just other people, like launching satellites and stuff like that, and they had to launch every month. and they were way behind schedule.
I think money was the main.
Money was the issue. Yeah, it was driving it. And Joseph probably felt pressure, like if I don't approve this, I'm going to lose my own job. So money for him, it was personal to him too. So who or what then was Joseph afraid of? What was he originally afraid of?
Disaster,
right. That's what caused the whole meeting to start. But then what overwhelmed that fear? Other people? His job? What his boss thought of him, right? The vice president thought of him. So what would you have done if you were in Joseph's shoes? Right? What would you have done?
No, this is kind of out of left field, but I'm kind of a manned spaceflight nerd. Uh-huh. And I would have thought back to the Apollo program, how I lost 3 astronauts in Apollo 1 because of pressure and cutting corners and not listening to the advice of engineers. And I've been like, no. But that's just with the knowledge that I have. Mm-hmm.
I think we'd all want to say, yeah, I would have stood up and stood on my principles and voted no. But then again, it's hard to say. What would you have done? There's a lot of pressure there. So what Joseph experienced then in this meeting was what biblical counselors would often call the fear of man. And just a note about that, when we say fear of man, we're not just saying fear of males or fear of men, literally. We mean men in the sense of people, okay? We're fearing other people. So although you may not know it or admit it or want to admit it, this is a problem that probably everyone here in this room struggles with. If you don't struggle with it now, you have in the past. And I bet you still do right now. So maybe the consequences that will happen to you if you give in to this temptation aren't as drastic as what Joseph experienced. I mean, he had a lot of guilt on his conscience for approving the launch, and then these people died. And he knew that he probably could have avoided that. But anyway, so today, I just want to investigate this and just look into it. I want you to be able to kind of deal with it in your own mind. Is this a problem for me? Or maybe you don't even know that it's a problem. Maybe you need to realize that it's a problem. So have you ever had these thoughts? I wonder what people think of me. Did they notice me when I left? Or do they even care that I left? Right? Do they think that I'm pretty? I don't have that problem, so don't worry about that one. Do they think that I'm smart? I do have that problem, okay? Or do they think that I'm, have I fooled you enough that you think that I'm smart, even though I know that I'm not? Do they think that I'm important? That is a big one, right? Maybe you've been given a task to do and you're happy to do it because, well, people will think I'm important, right? If I do this well. What if I try this and fail? What if I don't meet their expectations or let them down? So these are all thoughts that come into your head, and if these are things you've ever thought or are thinking, then you do struggle with the fear of man, okay? So here's some overall objectives that we're going to try to tackle in this next 4 or 5 weeks, and just give you a little outline of where we're going. Today we're talking about just identifying the fear of man, understanding the problem, all right? We're going to defer some hope. Hope is coming, but it's going to take a little while to get there. Investigating the fear of man is what we'll do next week and probably the week after. Just finding out what is the problem. What are some scenarios that I'm faced with? I didn't realize that was a link to the fear of man, but now I see that it is. Just kind of finding out what those diagnoses are. And then lastly, the last 2 weeks or week, we'll do invalidating the fear of man by fearing God, which is the solution to the problem. So I think about things probably in more of a mechanical way. I work on things. I have to diagnose what's going wrong with my trucks and my skid loaders and things that I work with. So you might have somebody drive up in the parking lot and you hear their car just has a terrible knock to it. And they get out of the car and say, hey, how's your car running? They say, oh, it's great. Never been better. And you're thinking, well, there's a noise there that I heard. It doesn't sound right, right? And they have no clue. It's like, well, maybe you should check your oil. Maybe it's low on oil. Maybe there's some other problems with it. They don't even know there's a problem, right? They need to hear that and say, yes, there's a problem there. So that's the point of today. Tomorrow, maybe you know there's a problem. Maybe you're driving your car and you're just like, man, when I get to 60, it just shakes all over the place and I don't know why. I know there's a problem, but I don't know where it's at. Well, what if you checked your tires? Maybe you've got bald tires. Maybe there's like a bubble on it and it's causing it to vibrate. Maybe you have a flat tire. That's happened before. There's little things that you can diagnose it. That's what we're going to try to do next week. And then obviously we need to solve this problem. What's the solution to it? So that's the way I'm thinking through this. Hope that helps for you. The resources that we're using, that I've used, and I'm just, full disclosure here, I'm just ripping these people off. All right? This is giving them credit. If you want to do some more reading, this is in our resource center. When people are big and God is small, this is probably the pinnacle book on this subject, Fearing Man, if you've read that. I like this one. It's small, Putting Others First. It's a 31-day devotional. You can read a little bit at a time. We're going to use a lot of this next week. I think he does a very good job of diagnosing in situations where you have this fear of man in your life and you don't realize it. And then, I haven't read all of this one, but I'm working on it, Pleasing People by Lou Priolo. It's the same idea. He kind of comes at it from a different, it's not the fear of man, but it's the people pleasing. And I think there's a little difference between the fear of man and people pleasing. I think fear of man is maybe more of is passive. It keeps us from doing things that we should. People pleasing is active. We try to please people because we fear what they're going to do to us or their reaction. This is really good. If you want to feel really convicted, read the first two chapters. Mm-hmm. There's Ben Marshall. Not the Ben Marshall we know. At the ACBC conference we went to just last fall, he did a seminar on fear of man. And if you'd like to listen to that, I like to listen to things because I have time. When I'm working, I don't have to think. I can just listen most of the time. So if you want to listen to something, that'd be something good to listen to. And if you want that, you can email Rachel at the office and she can send you the link to it. The Fear of Man, he did a breakout session on it. We're going to use some of his stuff today. And then Greg Gifford has a podcast called the Transform Podcast. You can find it wherever you find podcasts if you like to listen to it. He has a 3-part series on the fear of man that are really good, too. So that is where I'm getting most of this information. And just giving you a fair warning and heads up. So we're going to dive into this first part here. Identifying the fear of man, understanding the problem. So when we use the term fear of man, then what do we mean by that? Just give you an example. If you're a runner or a jogger and you're out jogging, especially if you're a lady maybe, and it's getting late in the evening and you're on your way home, but then you notice somebody's following you, and then you have this panic. I'm a little afraid of why this person's been following me the last couple blocks. Is that what we mean by the fear of man? What's the difference here? What do you think? How do we distinguish this fear? And we'll just roll this into the second question too, because it kind of goes along with it. How do we distinguish between this instinctive fear that we do have sometimes and someone fearing man? Is there a difference? It's a tough one.
Well, I think the first part, there's this physical, I mean, that's a fear of physical harm or mm-hmm. hurt. I mean, that can be a healthy fear. I mean,
it's a reasonable.
It's right. A reasonable fear.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Where then we get into this is more, this fear of man that you're talking about is more selfish centered. You're worried more about self.
What people
image.
Are thinking about you,
yeah.
That controls you.
Yeah. And going along the same lines, this would be an unreasonable fear.
So can somebody, go ahead. Somebody else going to say something back here? Can somebody have... Jason said something to me earlier when he walked in. He said, I fear snipers, all right? He's had an experience in the military. Well, where that's a real fear, right? So, let's say you're walking just around church, though. Do you fear snipers here, right? That's a real fear, but can it be... a sinful fear, a fear of man when it's unreasonable. Yeah. Okay. So there are real things, and I think Ed Welch does a good job discussing this, but there are real things that happen to you, have happened in your life, that can cause you to fear, and the world exaggerates that fear, but sometimes it's unreasonable, right, in the situations that we're in, and we exaggerate it. And that's when it becomes a fear of man issue. And I have a quote here from Ed Welch that I thought was good. The fear of man is the sinful exaggeration of a normal experience. Being afraid is not wrong in itself. As creatures living in a sinful world, we should be afraid at times. The problem is when fear forgets God. So we can have that fear, but we still know that God's greater than that fear, and he's looking after us, and we've And it's smaller in compared to who God is and who our Creator is. So what would be, I hope that answers the question. If it doesn't, we can continue there. But what would be some other synonyms or other terms that we or the world might use for the fear of man as we're trying to just wrap our head around this topic?
Peer pressure.
Peer pressure is one, okay. Mm-hmm. And that only applies to teenagers and people in school, right? Yeah, we've outgrown that, so thankfully we don't have to worry about peer pressure. No, that's not true, but that's where we often point fingers to, right? It's the kids that face the peer pressure. What else?
Codependency.
What does that mean? I had to look this definition up because I've heard it.
It's like your well-being is tied up into somebody else's. And so, like, codependent, like a wife married to an alcoholic, that's like where I heard that a lot mm-hmm. growing up. But they try to prop this person up to keep themselves going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's kind of it's a worldly term that people give for it. The definition I found was exactly what Heather was saying, a circular relationship in which one person needs another person who in turn needs to be needed. So it feeds on itself. You fear others because you need something back from them, and you enable that. What's another one, Jason?
Kind of along with the codependency, this is a concept that was introduced to me pretty recently, is living to a standard other than God's. So like, you're worried about offending the person's standard rather than offending God's standard. And you can get caught up in that because with God's standard, there is a clear route of atonement if you fall short. Mm-hmm. You can go to God, ask for forgiveness. There is not a clear route with people when you don't meet their standard. So you live in fear of falling short of that standard and then having to, you know, make up for not meeting someone else's standard.
Yeah. Some pendency you have to pay back. Yeah. Any other terms for this fear of man that you've heard?
Praise of man.
Praise of man. So you live, you do things in order to get that praise, right? That controls the way you act. I really want Alex to think well of me as I'm teaching here, so. You know, I want him to praise me.
I think there's maybe a fear, I don't know what you'd call it, but like social media nowadays and just being accepted and being approved of. And then like the fear would be like, if I get canceled, mm-hmm. then it's kind of I think maybe on the downhill slope of that, hopefully, but there's a lot of, like, you said the wrong thing, you posted the wrong thing, everybody piles on you. So you, I don't want to do that, so I'm not going to say X. We're not going to tell the, what I, kind of like the introduction that you had, that the engineer who was on that board.
Yeah.
So.
Almost kind of being, like, politically correct.
Political correctness, yeah, that'd be one version.
Yeah, if we don't say the right things, people are going to, cancel us. We're not going to be allowed in certain spaces. We won't be invited to certain people's houses. Anything else?
I watch a whole bunch of TV shows, but let's say I'm in a game and they say, oh, you have to do this. If you don't do this, I will do this and make your life miserable. What will you do?
Yeah, there's a physical, I mean, we're not saying, oh, this is just emotional or something like that. There's times where there's a physical pain that you could endure for the choices that you make.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Think of the Love Languages book. The 5 love languages, and one of them was words of affirmation. And you can need that so much that, I mean, all of those.
Mm-hmm.
But I think any time that you're acting to get a response
mm-hmm.
from somebody else.
Yeah. Right. So here's some helpful definitions that I've found. This one's from Tim Keeter. I'm not sure who he is, but Ben Marshall listed him in his seminar. God's word warns us about developing an over-anxious concern about what others think, primarily because it erodes our trust in the Lord. The Bible refers to this preoccupation with other people as the fear of man. So we have an over-anxious concern of what others think about us. Ed Welch. The fear of man can be summarized this way. We replace God with people. Instead of a biblically guided fear of the Lord, we fear others. And then Ben Marshall said, the fear of man exists when someone worships someone else in a major or minor way, attempting to achieve acceptance or avoid rejection for the purpose of feeling positive, or avoiding a negative feeling. That's a mouthful there.
Mm-hmm.
But he's right. We see other people, and we fear what they're going to think about us.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, it's probably good I'm teaching this class, but I'm standing here looking at all of you guys, and I'm judging reactions right now, right? What does that person think I'm crazy? You know, and we have to put that off. What should I be most concerned about? And I'm trying to think about that. But what should I be most concerned about as I stand here in front of you guys is what the Lord thinks about this. And is it right? And is this honoring to the Lord? And is this something that you can use to break that fear if you have it too, right? So which of these quotes, just want to interact with this a little bit, maybe explains the fear best to you? And which one of these maybe shed some new light on this issue? And then we're going to do a little activity, so.
I like the Ironman summit we had, the fear of God.
Yeah.
We doing a fear of man. What I look like, okay, I feel what people think about me. I do not care anymore because God made me.
Yeah.
He controlled me, so.
And we need to add that one to the list, too. That was, if you haven't listened to the Iron Man one of Bart from McPherson. No, Hutch. That was very good. Talked about the fear of man, and that's the beginning of wisdom. but obviously covered a lot of what we're going to talk about.
I like the third one. I like the how he talks about how it can be, you can see it as a positive of achieving acceptance, and on the flip side is the avoidance of rejection. So I think that it can be both of those things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we think of those differently.
Yeah.
But it both are the fear of man at the root. So
yeah.
I like that definition.
Right,
in the
go
first
ahead.
One, the preoccupation, like just constantly thinking about what others are thinking, or how they're viewing me, or not.
Yeah.
And just, but it's just that preoccupation. It's just always in your mind.
And it's like almost impossible to shake sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I think a common thing I keep hearing is, like with the sniper or the person following the jogger,
mm-hmm.
that type of fear pushes you towards God. And all the other fear, man, it's more about how's this affecting me.
Mm-hmm.
So kind
yeah.
of two opposite directions.
Right. That's a good way to diagnose that. Is this a healthy fear? Is this pushing me towards the Lord? Or is this is a sinful fear that it's about me? I'm losing something. I'm losing credibility. I'm losing what people, my good name, you feel like. Yeah, Dan?
I like the second quote a little bit for that reason, like just how Ed Welsh terms it, like if we have a fear that we're thinking about God, well, what is God thinking about
mm-hmm.
this, or how is God protecting me in this situation? Like the fear of man is just completely replacing God out of that
mm-hmm.
picture, and the focus is, I mean, what are the people around me thinking about me?
Yeah.
Like just, I like how he defines that. Like God's not in the equation when we're fearing man.
Yeah.
We're thinking about people.
And it's because we can see people. We can't see the Lord without faith. And we obey what we fear. That's what we're getting to. We obey what we fear. And we see people, we fear them, we obey them. A lot of the themes that we talk about here, I mean, they overlap. Right, we talked about idolatry. This is the root of this too, is idolatry. We idolize people, right? We fear what they think, and we don't worship God. It's a worship issue too.
I idolize somebody you don't care, like that, you know, that's mean to you and all that. I mean, you're still, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You're just kinda,
yeah, even somebody that's a bully to you, you still care what they think about you sometimes.
Yeah.
Right? All right, we've got about 25 minutes left, and this is going to probably take the rest of this time. We may end a little early, but the last page says, identifying the fear of man, an honest assessment. If you don't have this, Lindsay has a few extras. I want everybody to have their own little score sheet. We're going to take a little test. I know. It's the fear of man is coming out right now. So if you don't have one of these papers, raise your hand and Lindsay will get you one. If you need an ink pen, I didn't bring any, but maybe you can share the ink pen. Okay.
Yeah. You want us to put our name on?
Put your name on the corner. We're gonna put it up here on the board. Yeah, Jason.
I think while everyone's getting settled, just a comment on there, like the instinctual fear.
Mm-hmm.
It's not simple to be alert.
Yeah.
Like your body will react when you pick up on cues to be alert. It's what you do with your body's reaction to stimulus. Is that's when you have to take control of the flesh. Like, is it reasonable for me to be afraid of, you know, this person who is kind of ominously following me home? Yeah, maybe. That's not simple.
Yeah.
Like, where in my situation, where it's like, I can feel my body ramping up when I'm around tall buildings and there's no cover. Like, reasonably, maybe that's not the, you know, that's not a reasonable fear in this moment. But it's not a sin to be alert. It's if I let that fear control me, that's the demarcation, at least in my case.
Yeah. We don't go to the Lord and say, Lord, I'm afraid of this. Can you help me? I shouldn't maybe be afraid. Help me be alert, but not go over the edge and let this control me. So Identifying your fear of man. This is in the Lou Priolo's book, and Ben Marshall used this in his seminar, and he adapted. He added some questions to it. And then, so there's 30 questions. So rate them, rate yourself. Number one being always true of me. Two, usually true. Three, somewhat true. Four, seldom true. Five, never true of me. All right, so we're just gonna go through these. Write your number down. First question is, I listen with anxious attentiveness when others, can you see? Oh, I'm on the wrong one. It's not working. No good. I was afraid of this.
Your worst fear.
I tested this out before and it all worked. So, we can plug it in and you can switch it for me. We have a backup plan. We discussed this even before. The problem is I don't have a, I'm gonna have to read it off my computer because I don't have it on my paper. Or I can read that. Nope, I don't have it in the book. So I'm gonna have to stand behind the whiteboard so you can.
So are you okay about pain?
Slide this out of the way. We can do that. Alright, is it up there now? Okay. Number one. I listen with anxious attentiveness when others discuss which pleases them or displeases them. So you're worried about that because you can pick up on clues about what pleases people and I can please them better, right? That's the idea here. Not all of these will hit you in a certain way, right? There's a lot of different ones, so it's gonna hit different people in different ways. I strive to be politically correct more than biblically correct. That came up even in our discussion. I like to go fishing for compliments. And a lot of times we can do this in ways like we'll put ourselves down, right? Like we can drive home after Sunday here and I'll say to Lindsay, well, that Sunday school class, your mom did that. Right? And so what am I trying to get her to say? Oh, honey, no, it's fine. Fishing for a compliment. We do that. I gossip about others. About others to people who I believe will be pleased with me for giving them enticing tidbits of information. This is a longer one. My desire for a good reputation is predominantly based on how such a good reputation will benefit me rather than how that reputation will serve as a means of a greater end, such as the glory of God, the good of others, or some other unselfish objective. So basically, we're more worried about our reputation for our own good instead of God's good. I value the approval of certain individuals from whom I expect to receive certain honors more than the approval of those I do not expect to receive certain honors. So we might, for example, be more concerned of what Pastor Dave thinks of us or your boss thinks of you than somebody that's checking out your groceries at Walmart, right? They don't rank very high on your list. You're not going to receive any honor back from them, right? So you value those individuals who you think will honor you more. I worry about what people think of me. There you go. That's an easy one. I'm willing to sin rather than to face the rejection of certain individuals. I struggle with being a respecter of persons and showing favoritism. That's a tough one. I believe that being rejected is one of the worst things that a person could possibly experience. Like social media thing again.
I get canceled. That's like the worst thing that could happen to me. I avoid conflicts rather than trying to resolve them. That doesn't take you in a certain way. I don't know what would. I take unnecessary precautions to protect my good name. What you think is your good name, maybe. I become angry when I'm contradicted by others, especially being publicly contradicted. Or embarrassed. I just get embarrassed. And then probably get angry after that. So don't do that right now. When meeting new people, I spend more time thinking about how to impress them than how to minister to them. Think about going up to somebody that's new in church, right? What are you thinking about? I fear being rejected. The fear of being rejected paralyzes me to the extent that it keeps me from getting close to others. We're halfway through here. I forget that being rejected by others is part of suffering for righteousness' sake, which is my reasonable service to God and part of my calling as a Christian. This is something that we're called to be rejected sometimes by people. I long to be noticed more than I long to be godly. This almost goes back to I'd rather be politically correct than biblically correct. I give in to peer pressure rather than standing up for what is right. Think of Joseph Kilmeister in the meeting, right? He gave in to the peer pressure, even though he knew what he was doing wasn't right. And this is a good one. I do not witness to others as I should because I fear being criticized or rejected. I overreact to criticism by dwelling on it too long or unnecessarily, allowing it to depress me. Somebody gives you some good advice, just sends you into a tailspin. I say yes to requests made of me without consulting those closest to me or my calendar. Do you want to please people so much that you'll say yes to everything? You're busy, busy, busy. I want them to think well of you. I isolate myself from others relationally out of fear they will discover who I really am. I'm not going to get involved in Bible study too much. Church, people might see me for who I am. I often reply good or just fine when people ask me how I'm doing. I'm going to have to change my responses. Facial expression, tone of voice, body language are equally as important to me as the content of what is said. So you're reading into their reactions that when you're talking to somebody, not listening to what they're saying. You spend large amounts of time second-guessing a decision that you made, even after pouring hours into gathering all the necessary data. Some people it hits harder than others. You consistently make up excuses that will cause others to think the best about you instead of telling the truth. I think this is my one I struggle with a lot. Someone invites you to dinner, you don't really want to go. Make up an excuse. Well, nobody's invited us to dinner. You easily get embarrassed when you make a mistake or discover that others around you disagree with you. You will not engage in a homework assignment, work project, sporting event, or other activity out of fear of failure. And these last two are mine because I wanted to get to 30. You didn't answer some of these questions truthfully because you're afraid of what others around you are thinking. And the last one, you answered these questions truthfully but are hiding your answers because you're afraid of your neighbor. All right. So, I want you to tally your scores up. And, this is.
I have to do math. I'm not good at math.
If it's all fives, it's easy. If it's all ones, it's easy. So here's your scale, if you're wondering. If you're closer to 150, you're less likely to struggle with the fear of man. If you're closer to 30, or the closer you are to 30, the more likely you are to struggle with the fear of man. And Ben Marshall didn't mention this in his breakout session, but in the book, I just thought this was interesting. Lou Priolo, after doing this quiz, he says, if you score high, like if you're in, his score is a little different. So if you're like a 145 to 150 and you're thinking pretty well of yourself,
you might be a jerk.
He says, you might have a problem being insensitive, callous, or even hard-hearted. So there you go. Everybody's got a problem here. Right? So I hope that helps. It's just an activity to help us. Remember, today we're just investigating, right? We just want to identify this is a problem. Maybe you've never thought of this before. Maybe you've never heard of this before. Maybe you have, and you need another run through. All right. I hope this stirs up a little bit of curiosity, just to understand that this is a problem. And then next week we're just going to dive into, let's diagnose it. When this situation comes up, you can say, oh, I didn't realize this, but man, that's tied to the fear of man probably. All right. So any other comments or questions?
I think what's interesting for me is how I would have answered this 30 years ago versus today. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of difference in your stage of life, I think.
Yeah. So your score probably went higher? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
We were saying that too. Mm-hmm. Just like 5 years.
Yeah, a teenager would probably answer it a whole lot differently than an old man. Mm-hmm.
We think youth group helped
you. Youth group helped you.
But also, it's like I could recognize this when it's happening now.
Yeah.
So I can better address it, but it's weird how some of this still happens.
Yep.
Okay, I know it, I see it, but now I gotta take myself in hand.
Yep.
Because this is coming up.
Yep.
There was a comment that was talking about how it's like there's a certain amount of suffering that does us good. And if you think about the NASA story, if he had said no, it's not acceptable, though he would have suffered one way.
Yeah, like, that's true.
They would never have known the potentially, that it was a problem, and you would have suffered on the other side.
Yep.
So either way, there's...
Yeah, he was in a tough spot either way, probably, yep.
Yeah.
That's good. All right. You're dismissed a little early. We'll meet back here next week and dive into the next one.
Do and get off early.